so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you ready to do this, Matt Kolsky?
I am. That's not going to be as funny to people who didn't hear me say the exact same thing 15 seconds earlier when you asked if I was actually ready to record.
Yeah, Lord knows we just do this podcast for us anyway, so
I'm fine
with that. I may be ready. I'm fighting a chest cold today, so I apologize if my voice goes wonky.
I mean, look, you sound great right now, and that's all I can really speak to.
Yep, I promise to hold it together for at least the first 35 seconds of the pod. So,
mission accomplished.
All right, we got a lot of topics this week, as usual. I think we'll probably just sort of jump around and cover a few things. But the first thing I
want to – hold on. I mean, if we're going to jump around, we should also jump up and get down.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm glad we had to hold on for that.
Well, I tried to get it out on time, but I wasn't quick enough.
You're trying to play me out as if my name was Sega, dude. It's not cool.
Yeah, that's my bad.
Sunday night, HBO. I want to start Sunday night HBO. Now, did you see Big Little Lies? I missed Big Little Lies.
Full disclosure, I saw about somewhere between the first 15 and 27 minutes of Big Little Lies. And then all of a sudden I was waking up in my chair staring at a blank screen.
Now, was that the fault of Big Little Lies? Or I'm just curious how much mental, emotional energy I should invest in that project.
I don't think it was necessarily Big Little Lies' fault. It was at the end of a night where I had already watched a lot of television and a movie, and I was tired. So I do intend to give it another chance. Actually, I was thinking maybe tonight, after a little bit of Legion, I would mix in a Big Little Lies and see where I'm at. I didn't realize it was centered around a murder, though. And I did learn that in the first few seconds of the first episode.
Oh, so it's like Desperate Housewives, but classy.
Maybe. I didn't really watch Desperate Housewives, but maybe.
We sort of talked about, you know, there's been a little bit of a gap in Sunday Night HBO, if you're like us and not totally gaga about Young Pope. And I feel like that gap has ended. Whether Big Little Lies ultimately turns out to be successful and entertaining or not, because Girls has been really good so far this year. I really liked this week's episode.
I totally agree. I feel a little weird freaking out about two episodes of a show that I've already seen like 30 episodes of, but I really think it's as good as ever, if not better. Lena Dunham, man. She's so talented. That's all I got.
You know, I feel like, right, when people are like, I don't like Girls, I don't watch Girls, and at least judging by the numbers, there are many people who are in that camp. It is always some variation of either I don't like Lena Dunham personally, or I'm really bothered that she's always putting her boobs in my face, right? Usually that's kind of what it is.
Right. It's I don't like Lena Dunham, or I don't like Lena Dunham naked, one of the two.
Yeah. Or both. Sometimes it's both. Don't like Lena Dunham because she's naked all the time. And I feel like the show, particularly now, is so much more than that. For one, I don't know that there's a show on television that's better at using like the awkward, real things about sex, like to make you laugh.
Exactly right.
And like they're the master of that opening of the show with the sex scene that is like both honest and completely uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Honestly, like in if you ask me, maybe this let me couch it a different way. Before Girls, it really feels like if you only watched movies and TV, you would only know about two different versions of sex. The one where it's incredible and lasts for days, or the one where the dude, like, blows it very early on. That's it. Those are the only two kinds of sex
that you see. What about the one with really dramatic saxophone playing in the background?
No, that's still option A.
Okay.
It's like either it's either Rene Russo and I don't know why I'm going for this one. It's either Rene Russo and Pierce Brosnan in the Thomas Crown Affair or it's American Pie. All right? That's it.
Of all the sex scenes, Rene Russo. Yeah.
I don't know. Because when you said saxophone, my mind went to like, all right, what's a dark room with like sultry music and like a very sexy dress followed by like 3 minutes that feels like 10 hours of dramatic sex. And that's the one that came to mind. And like 3 days later, somehow they're on the beach, right? It's either that or it's American Pie. And Girls is just, and you know what? It's true of the sex. It's also just true of the humanity of that show, of the personal relationships. It's a true feeling show. And I actually have had young women who spend time in New York tell me they can't watch it because it's too real. And it's like a little bit of a flashback.
I'm sorry, you're making a very serious point. I was playing Kenny G Songbird on Spotify underneath while that was happening. I feel like I couldn't hear it,
but I would have leaned into it if I could.
No, that was a very serious point. And it's interesting to me, and kind of to go back to the criticism I feel like people often have about the show. It's like Allison Williams, right, is the one who kind of famously doesn't really do nudity on the show.
Until this week.
Well, no, there wasn't really any nudity, right?
I think you got a little more of Allison Williams than you have in the past.
They don't, so they have this agreement like, I'm not going to show this, I'm not going to show that. And they go, okay, well, we'll just, try to make the sex scenes as like real and uncomfortable as we can without doing all that stuff. And they do a great job with it. Obviously, there was famously the, the butt stuff scene from a few years ago. And then this one, they open up and she sort of gets hers first. And then they have this moment where he's like kind of trying to get his, and just, the camera's fairly tight on like the, their shoulders up, and just the look on her face.
Yeah.
It's like, I was literally not only cringing, but just going, oh God. Like really well done.
Really well done. Yeah. Well acted. The guy who plays Desi, I mean, he's a one note character, but he's great.
Yeah, he really is. And like, he is a one note character, except in this episode, this episode, for if you haven't seen it, you find out that Desi's had a drug problem for this entire year.
Yeah, which might explain the one note to a degree.
Yeah, and is engaged, and then engages in some somatic behavior. But he basically is like a horror movie villain at the end of it, where he's locked out of the house, and he does move to sort of legitimately scary.
That's true. He verges into like psycho drug addict scary for a minute.
Yeah.
Just in general, that character, to say it's a one note character is not an insult to the actor or to the writing, because it's deliberate.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been this caricature of a hipster music douchebag, and he has it's a person. That's a real person. Desi is a real person. And just because people are ridiculous doesn't mean they don't exist.
Right.
Girls does an incredible job of capturing the ridiculousness of everything. I feel like I just had a breakthrough.
Yep.
It really just shows you, ultimately, we are ridiculous.
Indeed. And, I mean, look, the two main plot lines, you know, in this particular episode seem to be about the, you know, the deepening or, you know, a note of resolution in the friendship between Hannah and Marnie, and then a note of dissolution between the two cousins, Shoshana, and I never remember Jemima Kirk's character's name's terrible.
Yeah, because she's Jemima Kirk.
Right.
And it's funny, I a buddy of mine knows her in real life and says said that, you know, in many ways that is Jemima Kirk.
Yeah.
It's Jessa.
Jessa, thank you. I always want to say Gemma because it sounds like Jemima.
It's a mix. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so it's about the dissolution, you know, or a little bit of a dissolution in their relationship. But what those plot lines have in common is that those moments are very earned for these characters over the course of the show. Like, you've been watching,
right,
you know, them
when they
learn lessons and gradually mature, you know?
Yeah, I think that's painted particularly starkly when you see the dissolution. Because when Zosia Mammoth starts being like, you did this and this and this. It's not just like a list of off-screen occurrences, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, she did do those things. I mean, there's a couple of extras, you know, like you slapped me around when I was a child sort of stuff. But it's you understand the characters to be exactly who they turn out to be. And you understand it because these are really well-painted characters over whatever it is, 6 years of the show. It's been so well done all along that I think, you know, maybe in the last season or two when the end point felt a little further away, it may have felt meandering a little more at times. But it's always been so well executed that now that I think that there's an end point, the like ultimate fleshing out of the characters is paying off really well because they were illustrated so well previously.
Yeah. I mean, you don't feel like anyone's going to get to an end point where they have like figured it out and know what they're doing. But Hannah,
Hannah especially, but they've all made some sort of steps forward.
Yeah.
Except maybe Jessa.
Like, at least Hannah has gotten to the point where she realizes that she doesn't know what she's doing.
Her speech,
yeah,
to Marnie, and then I think followed by her almost sort of dismissing it to Elliot, as like, oh, well, you know, I'm just like Marnie needs this. I'm gonna figure it out for her. I'm gonna be there for her, sort of a thing. But it shows an emotional maturity that certainly was absent from Hannah previously, and I think it's setting up what I think is going to be a really interesting sort of home stretch of interpersonal stuff.
Yeah,
because that's what the show's been about all along. Ultimately, is just, you know, young aging into not so young people trying to understand and handle each other, basically.
Indeed. And we spent a lot of time on Girls last week, so let's I'd like to jump to the new HBO Sunday night offering, which I really loved, and that is Crashing from Pete Holmes,
and Louis C.K. I believe.
Oh, is Louis involved in this?
I think it was Louis. Am I crazy?
I'll look that up.
I'll look into it.
I'm intrigued by that because, you know, this is a show that kind of – it really does feel like Pete Holmes.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's Apatow, not CK. It's Judd Apatow. Ah.
It does feel like this is Pete Holmes's version of Louis.
Right.
You know, and I know I use that comparison already for Atlanta.
Yeah, well, no, but it's true. Because Louis is not about what exactly happens or the particular depression of the particular character. It's about a comic living his truth on television. And Pete Holmes' truth is pretty different than anyone else's. So I think it's going to be interesting. But that's the same thing Donald Glover's doing.
Yeah.
And Glover's doing it more surrealistically, but so is Louis. I mean, remember, Louis' whole family is black on Louis.
Right.
Or his wife is black, rather, and his kids are, like, stark blonde.
Yeah.
Like, there are some surreal things that happen.
Some very
on Rui
surreal
as well.
Things. And you know, obviously the episodes tend not to really, like, you know, things will happen and then they're completely undone or never spoken again.
Simpsons sometimes,
yeah.
You know?
Whereas I think, you know, Pete Holmes sort of has this sort of Midwestern nice guy sensibility that I think is going to –
I don't expect surreality from Pete Holmes.
But I also think it's interesting to – and he references Louis C.K. at some point during the show.
Yes.
You know, the perspective of a
– got confused.
Yeah, of a comic who is, you know, just starting out, doesn't really know what he's doing on that level, and at the same time going through – the big life change that he was going through.
By the way, it's going to be a different version of that story. Lauren Lapkus, fellow graduate of Evanston Township High School, who's having just a great little career for herself as a comedian.
Yeah, she's like that one of those, hey, I see that chick around in things kind of chick.
She's in things, and she also does a podcast where she gets interviewed by a guest every week. So it's called With Lauren Lapkus. She's like, you know, my sister's age, friendly with my sister, and good for her. A lot of success out of my high school.
Yeah. Look at you. You're like, you were, who knew that you were at ground zero for improv comedy?
Yeah, no, I'm not ground zero. I mean, I think if anyone, there's lots of ground zero. I think Jeremy Piven and John Cusack are probably ground zero.
Oh, fine.
But I like to think that in my own minor league way, I am part of the success of the Evanston Township High School set. You know, I only made it to AAA, but hey, I played.
What was your mascot at Evanston Township?
It's the Wild Kit.
The Wild Kit.
Yes, because of course we are just about a mile from Northwestern and the Wild Cats.
Right. So why not just go with Wildcats? I'm a little confused.
That's a great question, but I did not actually – this is strange. I did not actually get to decide my high school mascot.
That's all right. I like giving other people crap about it because mine was way worse.
Worst ever.
Yeah.
Well, I think you better share.
We were – not making this up. The Unicorns.
Wait a second. That's great. Why is that worse?
What do you mean, why is that worse?
What are you talking about? You're a magic animal.
Is there a less fearsome animal in the
forehead
in the popular imagination than the unicorn?
Just because a thing is beautiful does not mean it cannot be vicious.
Can you give me one example of a vicious unicorn?
Yeah, sure. There's unicorns in Harry Potter that do damage, man.
All right, that's fair. I've never seen Harry Potter, so I wouldn't know.
Damn it. What's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on?
You've never seen any of the Harry Potter? You never read it?
No. No.
Weird.
No.
It's weird.
Not an accident, as you can tell.
Yeah. Man, old anti-magic over here. No, what? I think we just got to the bottom of your general anti-magic position. You're scarred. Because you were uncomfortable as a unicorn.
Maybe that's it. I had uni pride. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, when you say uni, it does sound pretty rough.
Yeah, it is. It was pretty rough. It was. I mean, like, you know, I went to a science and math based high school, you know, for smarty pantses. Yeah, exactly. So, like, you know, you're already coming in with that. Like, you know what I mean? You're
unicorn
playing,
nerds. Sorry,
you throw unicorn on top of that. It's not healthy. Probably explains a lot about where I am. So crashing, just to try to bring it back to whatever the hell we were talking about.
But we are talking about the HBO show Crashing, starring Pete Holmes. And this episode, man, were there a ton of comics. The only one who I guess gets a real guest star. Okay, well, I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now. And it says recurring characters, Artie Lang, T.J. Miller, and Sarah Silverman. So they may show up more, but that was just the beginning of the list.
Well, the premise seems to be, right, he's going to crash on a comedian's couch every week. This week it was Artie Lang. And I believe next week is T.J. Miller.
Yeah, and I can't tell if it's a new one each time. The only... The only episode named after a comic is the first episode.
And oh, okay.
It's called Artie Lang. So when Artie Lang, when it was like, this episode is called Artie Lang, I was like, oh, probably each episode will be named after a comic, and that'll be the one he crashes on their couch. But that's not the case. So I don't know if it's just bouncing back between Artie Lang and TJ Miller's couches or what. But I do know this is basically how Pete Holmes got into comedy.
Crashing on people's couches?
Specifically, getting married young as a Christian and having a problem in his marriage. And he got married at 22, the same age he began performing stand-up comedy, divorced at 28. It doesn't say more than that. In the Wikipedia entry, but I feel like, you know, I'm sure this was dramatized, but I feel like his wife was supporting him while he struggled, and then like it fell apart, and he crashed on people's couches, much people like Artie Lang, and sort of crawled up through the New York comedy scene to Chicago and ultimately out to L.A.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that is essentially what Pete Holmes did.
I don't know how real the story he's telling on the show is, but it's obviously very personal, and told in a really smart, funny way. I didn't really watch his talk show, his Conan talk show.
I did not either.
I'm not particularly familiar with his podcast, which I hear does very well.
I've heard a handful of them,
but. He's very winning in this show, not afraid to make himself look bad or anyone else, and
particularly to make himself look like sad and weird.
Yeah,
which is kind of his thing. I mean, his podcast is called "You Made It Weird," and that's what he does. It's like if Marc Maron, instead of getting angry, just made things weird, that would be the Pete Holmes podcast.
All right. I can be into that. Mark occasionally makes things weird.
But he makes things weird by getting angry. Angry way.
Yes.
Pete Holmes makes them weird in the way Pete Holmes is.
I mean, some of those guitar noodling things are weird.
Oh, I actually dig the guitar noodling, as you would probably expect.
Yeah, of course.
I like to hear a blues guitar riff out of the blue every now and then.
Mm-hmm. I like to hear Kenny G's Pete Songbird Holmes. out of the blue every now and again.
Pete Holmes is a guy who is the sort of, in many ways, the typical over-nice TV character. But that's the guy he's been in his life as a comedian already. So this is who he is. Yeah. And it's funny, man. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, this is a show that
his brand of awkwardness is hilarious.
I checked out because I had a few, 30 minutes of time on HBO Go to kill. And I'd heard someone say it was good. And now I'm like, I can't wait to watch the show every week. So I'm all in. I'm all in on Crashing. Took me one episode. I'm all in.
Well, also, I mean, Artie Lang, who I think is a regular character, as I said, is just awesome, man. He's really funny. He's the perfect foil for Pete Holmes because Artie is this grizzled, his jokes are hard-edged. He's given people crap. On multiple occasions in this episode, he's giving people crap in situations that are likely to get someone hurt. But ultimately, also a nice, lonely guy, right? Ultimately, right. This – and I think that may be one of the things that this show is about is just sort of the comedian's life where every comedian is ultimately living the same sad, lonely life. I mean, right. That's not totally true, but I feel like that's part of the message that we're going to be getting.
Yeah, comedy comes from pain. The show has a little bit of a riff on that, right? Because, Pete tries to take his pain on stage, and the guy's like, "Yeah, Tig Notaro went up there the night she had cancer, found out she had cancer, and killed." Right. And then he goes up there and bombs.
He's setting him up when he says that. Obviously,
yeah. But that was a little bit of a play on that. But you're right. I think the expression of authentic pain, I think, seems to be really in in comedy, and for good reason, because there's a lot of good comedy to come from it.
Yeah.
Of course, now there's also the news. So those are the two places that great comedy seems to come from these days.
Yeah, I find it a lot harder to laugh at the news. But I do, and Eddie Murphy has his own demons, but the comedian whose comedy is almost all just, you know, goofiness and joy and doesn't come from some place of emotional depth is very rare.
It's true.
You know, Moore is a guy who talks about that in himself a lot, but, you know, he's also an alcoholic in recovery, I believe.
Right. Well, I mean, look at Rob Williams, you know what I mean? Like, that was a guy whose comedy on the surface was nothing but goofiness and joy, right? But obviously, you know, masking some very dark demons underneath.
Yeah. And, you know, there's degrees of difference to what people bring to the stage. But I do think the vast majority of comedians are operating from a place that includes some pain and some loneliness, perceived or real. And, you know, obviously this show is built around a setup that, you know, the foundation is Pete Holmes being broke and having nowhere to go.
Indeed. Indeed.
And I like that makes me laugh a little bit, but that's just because the show is doing its job.
Yeah. So, let's jump to the world of music. 'Cause you had something that you wanted me, to listen to this week. So go ahead and introduce, it's Jidenna, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah. Jidenna. And it's interesting 'cause I had only listened to maybe half of the album when I said we should listen to it. I was literally on my way home from work playing the album for the first time when I was like, you should listen to this and we should, check it out.
Now Jidenna is the guy that did Classic Man, right?
He did Classic Man. He also was on one of my favorite shows of last year, Insecure, as Molly's boyfriend who wasn't really her boyfriend but said he was to make her feel better at a party. Sort of a light-skinned dude with reddish coiffed hair and like a you know, somewhere between 1920s and 1950s look. Which fit with the whole Classic Man thing. I was talking to a friend about it, actually. He kind of put himself in an unfortunate position of never being able to show up anywhere in sweatpants by doing Classic Man as his first big hit. He now has to look like he's super sharp from a bygone date at any time he appears in public.
Yeah, but I don't think you're right that sorry if you're not prepared to do that. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. That's a good point. He's a whole style thing in addition to being a talented rapper and singer. And he is one of the awesome artists on Janelle Monáe's label, Wonderland. And this is sort of – if you're wondering how I consume music outside of the mainstream, and this is pretty mainstream, but I've been waiting for this album for 3 years because my thing is I find people – who I like and really respect their taste and find the ones that are running music labels and then just trust them. And via Janelle Monáe, you know, I've now heard Jidenna and a guitarist named Roman Gianarthur, who we should actually – I'll assign something he did for homework next week because it's right up your alley, I think. And just all these young, talented people that are doing interesting things. And Jidenna is one of them. Now, I will say his album, which is called – I think it's called The Chief.
It is called The Chief. That is correct.
And there's a couple of different Chief-related songs on it. It's much more of just a hip-hop album than I was expecting, if I'm totally honest. Because Classic Man is, you know, more of like an R&B hip-hop combo. And – he can sing, or has sung at least significantly on earlier tracks. So I was expecting a little more of a hybrid, but he's a really strong rapper, I think. And I also just think musically he's doing awesome stuff. So I really like it. I don't know if it's, you know, album of the year material, but I really like it.
You know that I am, when we've talked about Janelle Monáe, and I'm a fan of her and her talent and vision and, yeah, and ideas. I don't want to besmirch the name of Janelle Monáe, but
all right, here
yeah, I was, it's a tough position for me because I felt like this is a really unremarkable album. And, you know, unremarkable as a criticism is also unremarkable. So here's what I'll say. Like, this is a guy who's, you know, to me, like, trying a lot of different things. Yes. There are a lot of different sounding songs. You know,
right,
they're all either rap or R&B, but they're very different tones. There's some techno sounding songs, some more classic hip hop sounding songs. Some are more minimalist. Some are more produced, but none of them are particularly good or memorable. Like Classic Man is a really memorable song. I probably heard that song 5 times in my life, but
I do it think stays Classic with you. Man would be the best song on the album. I'll agree with that. I also agree that he's doing a lot of different things, and it's more of a hip hop album than I expected, but it's not focused exactly. And I don't, unremarkable as a hard criticism, I think is strong, but unremarkable as a reason it's not a great album, I would agree with that.
Like I just happened to this morning run into the Pitchfork review of it, and I'm far from a Pitchfork devotee. But I was like, let me see what they said about it. And it got a 5.8, and I was like, yep, that's exactly where I am. This is a 5.8 kind of album. You know what I mean?
For me, I think it's more of a 6.8, you know, out of 10. That's still not excellent. But I think it's the – I think he's talented enough, and there are enough good songs – that this is an interesting debut from a guy who can do a lot of different things and probably should focus on one for an album.
Mm.
Is that fair?
That's fair. What did you think of the song? I'm just curious. The song White Niggas.
Yeah. I mean, not my favorite.
Because Pitchfork loved it, which I thought was interesting. And I found it to be an atrocity. You know what I mean? In an album with a lot of like really like pleasant songs. I just was like, oh boy, this was,
yeah, no, I don't love that one. I do really like Long Live the Chief as just a, you know, sort of banger. It's not Bad and Bougie. It's not
right.
But I think it's, you see his talent on a song like Long Live the Chief.
Yeah, like he's talented and versatile. Like I'm not trying to say like, oh, there's nothing here. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
no, I know. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're that far apart. I think we're, you know, we're 1 to 2 points in a 10-point album review apart, but feeling a lot of the same things. I think just maybe because I've been following him a little more seriously, I'm more hopeful about what this album represents than I am disappointed with the fact that it's not a you know, classic album.
Gotcha. From a classic man. Boom.
Pun intended.
So you mentioned another guy on Janelle's label that I need to check out.
Yeah, let me do this right now because it's an easy – although I bet you're going to complain about it again because
– because that's what I do.
Exclusively listen to Spotify. So I'll just pull up my Spotify and see. But Roman Gianarthur, who I was first introduced to opening for Janelle Monáe at one of her concerts and then realized was on her label and have followed since then, he's a guitarist, basically, guitarist and singer. And he did a... he did a free EP that you can definitely get on SoundCloud, and I'm hoping you can get on Spotify, called OK Lady. That is a live played kind of mashup of Radiohead and D'Angelo, I believe it is.
Well, that sounds right up my alley.
Yes. And it is, let me see. Roman, and his last name is G-I-A-N Arthur. Roman G-N Arthur. I don't know that he's going to be on Spotify, unfortunately. Mm. But again, free download. Oh, no, here he is. He played on Classic Man also. But this free EP that you can just play for yourself on SoundCloud anytime is phenomenal. I mean, it's just – it's a subtle sort of R&B-ifying of Radiohead, but it's not so R&B-ified that it loses the essential weirdness and awesomeness of Radiohead.
I'm interested in that.
Highly recommended, and I think we should – listen to it for next week and give it a quick shout.
This is a slight tangent, but have you ever heard the reggae tribute version of OK Computer?
I have not.
There's a reggae compilation of people doing the entire album, so every song, and it is like it sounds like a horrible idea, and it's really good. Like OK Computer really works as a reggae album, and you should definitely listen to that sometime. I need to figure out if I can figure that out. We want to sign it this week because I'm going to give you my own record, which is the latest from the Cloud Nothings. Band out of – the album's called Life Without Sound. And the Cloud Nothings are a three-piece. It's really one of those where it's, you know, one guy, you know, hiring a couple other dudes. But, you know, there aren't a lot of people – still making like lo-fi indie power pop, and I think Cloud Nothings are really as good at it as anybody, and their new single I'm just kind of obsessed with and have been listening to over and over again, so I'd love to know your take on the rest of the album.
The album Life Without Sound?
Without Sound, correct, from Cloud Nothings. And it, you know, like all good power pop records, it goes down easy. It'll be it's a
more,
short record.
More power pop than shoegaze.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Okay. All right. not a lot of shoegaze happening there. It'll go quick.
Okay.
All right, so we'll do those, and then maybe at some point I will make you listen to that reggae OK Computer. It's
I would love to listen to it.
I know it sounds
awful.
You're
not going
to
have to make me do anything.
They also did Dark Side of the Moon. I don't know if you ever heard that one. It was kind of in that same group of things.
I might have.
Yeah.
I'm really excited that I thought of the Roman G.N. Arthur thing because it's only six tracks. It's, you know, 30 minutes of your time, and I cannot recommend it strongly enough.
All right. Well, I'm in. All right. So let's move. I did have a movie thing I want to discuss. You know, I was in town, this weekend.
I do know, although you had no time for your friend.
Sorry. We tried to get it together.
Sorry. I'm not mad.
But I did want to I did try to catch a flick. And so, you know, of course, I've been on a mission to try to see Oscar stuff. And we wanted to go to the Alamo Draft House there in the Mission. I'd never been to an Alamo Draft House. And by the way, is a delightful experience.
Would recommend Alamo Draft House.
Yeah. And if anyone from Alamo Draft House happens to be listening, like Minneapolis Lake needs one of those like stat. Like that would be great. There's definitely a market for that.
I have to believe any city with a population of over 500 hipsters will sell out an Alamo Draft House every single night.
Yeah. So you refurbish some old theater. We got a ton of those here. And you put a nice bar in it.
Bar.
Yeah. And you do the seats up and you serve some food. Like the goofy stuff they play before the movies with is incredible. Like you can just tell they love movies and everything is really well considered. So I enjoyed that experience, but unfortunately, I'm trying to watch a movie on President's Day, and it's pouring rain outside.
Yeah, which I did the same thing. I saw John Wick 2 on President's Day.
Yeah, which means literally anybody within a 20-mile radius of the Mission. had the same idea as I did. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I started with, I'm going to go see La La Land, but that was sold out. And then we're like, well, maybe we can catch Moonlight again, or, oh, that's sold out. And eventually I wound up with the only thing they had tickets for, which was the Lego Batman movie.
And by the way, since it sounds like you were not otherwise going to see the Lego Batman movie, I'm going to say this is the best thing that could have happened to you.
Yeah, there was zero chance I would have seen the Lego Batman movie, of any other accord. I didn't see the first Lego movie.
Really?
I do watch Batman movies. Typically, like the Christopher Nolan Batman movies I've seen. Uh-huh. But you know how I am about superhero movies in general. Right. So... yeah, that just wouldn't happen.
You gonna watch? Is Batfleck gonna happen? Even I guess that maybe not now, right?
Yeah, it's really gonna depend on what the movie looks like, particularly who's directing, right? We know it's not Affleck.
Yeah, I mean, God, I hope it's not Zack Snyder again. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, like if he's anywhere near it, then no. So
yeah. Anyway, the Lego movie is great, and. You may have actually enjoyed Lego Batman more for not having seen the Lego movie because, you know, there is just the delightful novelty of Legos doing things.
Yeah, and I have some idea. Like, I knew the tone, the Lego movie, and yeah, obviously, you see clips or whatever. I knew there'd be some songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, that was really fun. I'd recommend the Lego Batman movie. Like, it was legitimately funny.
It was really funny. It was a ton of fun. It's all very silly. It's the kind of comedy that you can watch with your grandpa or your children. It's just really enjoyable.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm eating truffle popcorn and sucking down alcoholic milkshakes while it's going down. And
Did you get it? You got one of the boozy milkshakes?
Yeah, boozy milkshake.
I love the boozy milkshakes, man. My favorite dining item in the entire Bay Area is at a place, there's now two locations, called Rudy's Can't Fail Cafe.
Oh, yeah, that's Mike Dirt from Green Day operates the Rudy's.
Is it Mike Dirt? Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was Mike or Billy Joe. I knew one of them had a stake in it. But, yeah, it's this, like, punk diner that has – it's, like, slightly upscale but, you know, affordable and reasonable, huge menu. And one of the things they have on it is – called a Shaken Jesse, and it is an espresso chocolate Guinness milkshake.
Oh, man.
And it is like the best thing I have ever tasted in my entire life.
I need to put one of those in my belly like now.
Oh, my God. My funniest experience with it was one time when I got it, and I was enjoying it so much that I like saved half of it for the end of my meal, you know? And so I'm just sitting there while everyone's done sipping on a Guinness milkshake, and the waiter comes by, and I'm like, hey, could I just have the rest of this milkshake packed up to go? And he's like, no, you may not have that alcohol in a to-go cup.
You're like, oh, yeah. That's not very punk rock of them.
No, it's not very punk rock, but I do understand. It is the law.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah, so see the Lego Batman movie. I mean, look, it's the kind of movie that seems like an ideal HBO – you know, in 18 months kind of movie.
Yeah,
I'm not saying like
is,
rush
but
out,
like,
but it's worth watching.
Spend that hour and a half with Lego Batman. It's totally worth it.
All right, should we jump into some basketball?
Pun intended. Yes, we should.
I mean, there's no actual basketball happening, right? Basketball
right.
Well, doesn't start till tomorrow.
Basketball.
But man, there's been some movement.
Let's
in the
talk
NBA.
Basketball. The basketball husbands of New Orleans is what we're really talking about.
All right. So Boogie Cousins arrives in town. I mean, that's like, you know, when basketball comes back on Thursday, like you're finding New Orleans, right? That's
well, one of the
everyone
funniest
wants to see
things
what that
about
looks like.
This, and for people who don't know what the hell Derek's talking about, obviously DeMarcus Cousins, one of the best centers in the NBA, arguably the best center in the NBA.
Just curious, so Cousins is the blank best player in the NBA. Where is he a top 10 NBA player?
Yeah. Ish.
Yeah.
I'd have to do it up, but he's in that range.
I feel like if I did the list, he might be top 15.
He's definitely top 15.
Yeah. But
he has top five potential.
Yeah. A possible franchise player, certainly. So the
skills, ability, he is a franchise player.
Correct. Ability, he is a franchise player, except that he's been in the league for 7 years.
That's right.
As a franchise player, quote unquote, and his franchise has been terrible that entire time. So, well, there's still some, you know, there is still some proving to be done for Boogie.
I think we can say definitively that's true. Certainly, DeMarcus Cousins has things to prove. That's a fact.
Right. Now, I mean, it's hard, right? Because commingled in that, yeah, is.
We can say equally definitively that he has never had a chance to be on a good team, and that is not his fault.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I think, look, the fact that he's been in Sacramento and they've been losing, it's really hard to separate out. Like, is it, inextricably linked that because he's been in the Kings and the Kings have been just this bizarre, dysfunctional disaster for that entire time, is that the Kings' fault or is it Boogie's fault? Because you could certainly make the case that he's somewhat of a destabilizing presence within any organization, right? So
you can make the case that he has contributed to the dysfunction of the Kings. In fact, I think that's definitely true.
I don't even think that's inarguable that he has contributed somewhat. I think the question is how much.
The degree to which he's contributed is somewhat up for debate. But I think what I'm saying is, you can say definitively that whether he had been the best person or the worst person, what he has had around him has never been enough to compete.
No, they haven't had great teams. He's played for like 100 different point guards in 7 years and almost as many coaches. Yeah. So like that's a problem. But at the same time, I think the way the Kings, because the Kings very publicly – as recently as last week, we're saying we're not trading Boogie. We're going to sign him, to like that new Supermax extension or whatever.
Which he wanted to
He's going to retire here.
Extremely rare.
Yeah. And the fact that I think that they backed off the precipice of that was because there were a lot of people that were, concerned in the organization that his destabilizing effect on the team was so great. Now, you could flip that around and just go, okay, the Kings are idiots, and that's why they backed off. But it's just hard to know, right? Where does Boogie's nonsense stop and the Kings' nonsense begin? Or do they go hand in hand? You know what I mean?
I mean, it's all of the above. And you're right that the exact point of where Boogie's problems end and the Kings' problems begin is up for debate, but it's just not up for debate that they've never successfully put any talent around him.
Right.
That's not up for debate. And so we can talk about his technical fouls and his berating
of which he leads the league.
Yeah. By a substantial,
a league that contains Draymond Green.
Draymond's not even in the top five.
I know, it's crazy, right? And Russell Westbrook, who I believe is number two, right, in technical fouls.
He's a psycho.
But Boogie's got some distance on Russell, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Yes. No, he's – but you can also defend – unlike situations where it's impossible to say whether the team might thrive in his absence, that's not the case here. It is very possible to say that DeMarcus Cousins has been on a team – where he has been so far and away the best player by a million miles for his entire career, and where the team has never seriously done anything to put players around him to help him succeed from a basketball standpoint. And in fact, the one stretch where the Kings and DeMarcus Cousins played really high quality winning basketball was the first few weeks of the season when Mike Malone was the head coach. Boogie was really coming into his own. I believe it was the 2014-15 season.
And then they fired him.
Boogie got viral meningitis. Missed 2 weeks they lost basically all their games, and then they fired the head coach, which was galactically stupid. It was the first coach they had that was developing a positive relationship with their superstar. The team was playing winning basketball against the odds. They lose the only player they have, lose games without him, and fire the coach before he even gets back.
Right.
It's apocalyptic stupidity. It's unbelievable. Just as this trade and the immediate aftermath and comments by GM Vlade Divac are nothing short of apocalyptic stupidity and patently insane behavior. For him to come out and say he had a better deal 2 days ago and then not explain that is like he's either taking a shot at someone's agent or at his own owner, or God knows what he's doing.
Yeah, well, I think
but he's also admitting gross incompetence.
That's probably it. See, here's the, you know, I mean, look, when you get into the Kings, doesn't it start with Vivek, who is the owner of the team, Vivek Ranadive, I believe is the correct way to say that.
That's correct.
He's an owner who's very involved in basketball operations. And very into the
and inappropriately. It needs to be said he is very involved. He is involved in basketball operations to an inappropriate degree, given his expertise.
Yes, he's a guy that came from Silicon Valley. Yes. You know,
he was a part owner of the Warriors before he bought the majority of the Kings.
No, this is something I just learned. He does not own the majority of the Kings.
Before he paid a fee to be the front man.
Yeah. Basically. Yes. Yes. So he's got 20% of the team, but has all the amassed power of that.
But he is the largest single owner of the team, I believe.
I think so. But yeah, he doesn't.
By a similar token, Joe Lacob is not the majority owner of the Warriors. I don't think Peter Gruber is actually a bigger money man, but the agreement is Joe is the ownership face.
Right. So Vivek's running the team. Real Sports did a really interesting piece on Vivek back, I guess, right about as he was buying the team. So I think
before. And he is an interesting and intelligent guy.
Right. Yeah. And very successful in business, obviously. You know, that's how you get to be an NBA owner. But he's a guy that's had an idea of we should play 4-on-5 and cherry pick at the other end, and
I mean, you know, he will tell you that's not true, but that was reported,
and a bunch of other things, and
he essentially went from coaching his daughter's 8th grade basketball team to
very successfully. They did great.
to believing that he had legitimate NBA management expertise, which is a pretty absurd jump.
Right. And so, you know, he's kind of trying to been putting a stamp on the organization. Supposedly he's obsessed with the Warriors. And the reason that they fired Malone is that he wanted to play up-tempo. Malone didn't want to play up-tempo because they didn't have the personnel, and there you go.
Yeah, but think about what you just said. Malone didn't want to play up-tempo because they didn't have the personnel, a.k.a. Michael Malone is a good basketball coach.
Yeah, look.
So he was trying to do what the talent dictated.
I'm not trying to defend Vivek. I'm just trying to
point context. No, I know, but I'm just trying to point. I'm trying to point a spot focus on how absurd the firing of Mike Malone is. Vivek will now tell you that it was actually general manager Pete D'Alessandro who had wanted to fire Malone from the day he got there.
Yeah.
Here's the problem.
But everyone knows the buck stops with Vivek.
No, but that's not even the issue.
He's got the final say.
Vivek hired Mike Malone in the summer of 2013 and then hired Pete D'Alessandro right after. So if what he's saying now about this is true, he went and before he hired a general manager, hired a head coach, and then weeks later – hired a general manager who hated that head coach.
Yeah. So look, it's nuts. The culture is nuts. There are a lot of people who are, who don't necessarily understand what's happening. And apologies, because this is going to be a hard veer out of the toy department for a second. But it's not, to me, it's not unlike the Trump administration, right? So the way that
I hate to make that comparison, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
So the, you know, the way the management style, and this is really an apolitical point, I'm just saying kind of how it is. The way that Trump ran both his business culturally and the White House culturally is that he sort of likes to be the guy at the center of, you know, of the room, like physically at the center of the room. Like he sits at the fancy desk, right, as opposed to the Saturday Night Live Steve Bannon fancy desk. And and he has a bunch of advisors come in and he kind of likes to play them off each other. And so, you know, the people underneath him have this kind of vested interest in making themselves look good and correspondingly making themselves look bad. And that has created the culture of leaks that you see in that White House. And then because we know Trump watches a lot of TV, a lot of the people in the White House have currently taken to trying to go on television and make points that are really directly addressing the president. And so to me, yes, I think it's very possible that Vlade Divac said that as a way to either deflect blame or sort of subtly undermine Vivek, because that's just where the kings are at. You know what I mean? Like it's that level of dysfunction. And now, you know, they've traded away their best player, a guy who, you know, the numbers will tell you that the Kings are a competent average NBA team with Boogie Cousins on the floor. You know, a team that is in, a fringe contender for a playoff spot, right? I think they were
and
ninth.
Garbage without him.
And then, yes, and just completely horrendous without him. I would also tell you that there are people in the NBA. I'm not one of these people. I'm not in the NBA. But there are people who are in the NBA that believe that the Kings will be better. That will they will actually improve without Boogie. So those people just don't know where the mess will begin.
No, hold on. Those people are idiots. Because half of the point of this trade, if there is any point, is to lose. If the Kings finish in if they get a top 10 draft pick, that's not their draft pick.
Yeah.
or rather, if they don't, I'm sorry. If they get like, you know, if they're not in the top 10, they have a draft pick trade to the Bulls that is top 10 protected.
Yeah.
So if they finish 11, you know, if they finish with a good enough record to get the 11th or worst pick, that's not their pick.
Right.
So part of this is absolutely to lose basketball.
Yeah.
Games.
Well, and that's the other part of this, right? Is that they've spent the last 4 or 5 years making win now, build around Boogie moves, and you know, dumping draft picks to dump salary on the Sixers, and this trade with the Bulls, and it, you know, and now they veered hard from that, and they're gonna be blow it up and collect picks. They're going to be terrible for a long time, right? Like, that's just that's how that goes.
And they've been even more directionless than you just suggested, because it was not just steady on the road towards building around Boogie and then a veer right now. It's been wildly swerving back and forth across the road. And when they hired Vlade Divac, who had no front office experience, literally none, to the point where he didn't know the rules of being a general manager.
Didn't past tense.
Right. That's the point. Everything he does, he's learning on the damn job, which is just insane. And look, you know, you have hires like – you can look at what the Niners just did, hiring John Lynch in as their GM. And you know, his front
and
office
ask
experience –
ask a lot of the same questions. I think you could ask a lot of the same questions.
No, I don't think so, because his front office experience, while next to nothing, he's like sat in some draft rooms with John Elway and like asked people a lot of questions, and he's a smart guy. But
Matt Millen, sorry, my cold's acting up again.
Let me finish my point.
Okay,
the very first thing John Lynch did as the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers is hire Adam Peters, the top scouting director from the Denver Broncos, who is one of the most respected personnel guys whose names you haven't heard in the entire league. And the first thing he did was hire that guy, make him vice president of player personnel, and essentially import all of the scouting work that he has done. So he hired the most experienced guy he could right off the bat, and the Kings have not done that. They have not surrounded Vlade Divac with people who can help him and handle the mechanics of being a general manager while Vlade handles the title.
Right. Well, more to the to that point, knowing all the things that we've talked about the state of the organization and the culture of the organization, and knowing that, you know, if you're working under Vlade, you're working under a guy who really doesn't, you know, have full control of the basketball operations. Like, what kind of veteran quality scouting person is going into that situation? And by the same token, what NBA free agent is going into that situation? You know, they acquired Rudy Gay, and Rudy Gay has told people who have arrived in Sacramento, welcome to basketball hell. Like, that's the reputation around the league, which means you then have to build through the draft, because no one's just showing up, or through shrewd trades, which we know is not going to happen. It's just ugly. All right, so this segues nicely to the other basketball thing I think that's going on, because there's an inexperienced general manager now in place in LA, Vlade's former teammate, right? They play together.
Not a general manager.
What's his title exactly?
President of Basketball Operations.
Okay.
He is expected to hire a GM, and that is expected to be Rob Pelinka.
Oh, right. That's correct. Who is also would also be a first-time GM.
Yes, but – and again, this is the point. The Golden State Warriors have a first-time GM, but he's an agent. He's a guy who comes from a negotiation background who intimately understands
the salary,
the rules of the salary cap and the league and trades and player signings. And that's what the Lakers are doing. The Lakers are following the Lakers reportedly reached out to Bob Myers, which is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my entire life.
I'm sure they went, well, you know, he played at UCLA.
I think it's different than that. I think it's classic Laker arrogance, and it's part of what's gotten them to the situation they got into, which is Jim Buss, when he took over for his father and Jeannie, his sister, disrespectfully was like, yo, listen, bro, you got like 3 years to turn this thing around or I'm stepping in, and that's what just happened. Jim Buss took the approach of, we're the Lakers, and that means something still. And it doesn't. He thought because he was the Lakers, he was going to sign free agents.
Nothing, but it doesn't mean what they thought it was going to mean, certainly. I think that's fair.
I mean, it means a little something to the small set of current NBA players who have a deep and abiding respect for the history of the game.
It's yeah,
but that's
yeah,
it. And
no,
it, and
no,
even
no.
In that it, case,
I mean,
I
it
bet
also
it means
it'll
less
look,
than $5 million.
It also means LA, right? The Clippers are the better team, but the Lakers still are the team culturally in LA, which is
but
a place a lot of
guys,
players in the league come
these,
from and want to live in, and like.
It, but they do anyway.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Like, I'm not – look, like, that's why I said it means less than before. But it does mean something.
See, I think from an exposure and lifestyle standpoint, it means very little to these guys. Because they – I mean, most of these dudes move to L.A. or New York for the offseason anyway. And
not even really New York. Like, it's all L.A. It's L.A. and Atlanta is where most of these guys live in the offseason.
Okay, fine. And it's mostly, you know, they're during the season, they're mostly working anyway. Not that they don't go out, but you're traveling all over the place. Where you live is
right.
not
and
as big of a deal.
Obviously, you can be famous and a fashion icon and whatever in Oklahoma City.
Exactly. So, the like, national exposure and ability to get big ads and to be popular and to raise your Q rating, it's almost irrelevant.
I get all of that. I'm just saying, like, I think there's still some prestige in the league.
Who's the last free agent that's gone to L.A.? I mean, I know the answer.
Yeah, I know it's been a minute. But like some
but,
of that
– But do you know who it was?
Dwight was not a free agent, correct? Dwight
no,
was a trade, right?
I believe he was.
Oh, he
I
was?
Mean, even if it was a trade, the last big-name player who was like, I got to go to L.A. was Dwight Howard.
Right. Well, but
which
some
was
of that
several years ago turned out horribly, and no one has even sniffed them since.
Yeah, well, but
and
some of that was Kobe, and it's
was coming.
Right, and like the you know, and the fact that he had $48 million of that cap for a while, and that nobody really wanted to play. You know, when he was, I don't know that that's necessarily reflective of the mystique of L.A. like it's true, it's accurate. But I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I think there are also other circumstances there.
Yeah, but that's the point. People looked at the other circumstances.
Yeah.
And Jim Buss thought, we're the Lakers. We can just go out and get people.
Right. Now that, that we are in agreement. Like, that's a serious overestimation.
And look, that's – I don't think there's any doubt that Mitch Kupchak is a perfectly viable general manager. But it goes back to the Kings thing when you are working at the behest of a mercurial nut job who's not good at his job, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, look, I Pelinka and Magic I think will be interesting. Pelinka's a guy, played in the Fab Five, was Kobe Bryant's agent forever.
Pelinka is Bob Myers.
Yeah,
and I think there's every reason to believe that's a really good hire.
I just – who's the guy that's going to be, over in, Greece trying to find the next freak? You know what I mean? Like the general manager role is really crazy, and I just
– But again, look, Bob Myers came in and he retained Larry Riley, who had been the GM and is an excellent scout. Was actually one of Don Nelson's guys, but Bob Myers knew he was the dude that drafted Steph Curry, basically, and hired people with great personnel expertise to run the scouting departments. That's here's the point: you have to hire smart people with relevant experience and relevant contacts. Now, Vlade Divac, by all accounts, is a smart guy. He's certainly a well-liked and respected guy around the basketball world.
Certainly.
Everybody loves Vlade. And I think if they had gone about it if the hire of Vlade had been to put a good face on the front of the organization with a smart guy and then empower talented people underneath him to do the dirty work and the mechanics of basketball front office, I think that could work. But it seems more like the hire of Vlade was to bring in a face for GM that the owner could step on.
Yeah, right. You can't hire –
didn't have the leverage, because if you bring in a legitimate GM – and Vivek starts to run amok and overrule him, that legitimate GM will be gone.
Right. Right.
He'll either force himself to be fired or he'll quit or whatever. And, that, by the way, just to tie it back quickly, is why another reason I'm encouraged by the Niners is John Lynch, although he does not have GM experience, certainly has the "I really don't need this job" hammer. And he already wielded it in the process of getting the job by, literally testing the Niner front office for leaks. And they listened to him. So, as sad as it is, that represents great progress for the San Francisco 49ers. The Kings are not even at that point. Because the leaks are everywhere. And, in fact, forget leaks. Vlade is coming out and saying cryptic things about
Vlade getting mixed in
a way...
It's just like Wright's Priebus, right?
Oh,
right?
Jesus. Right? Stop this.
He's the guy complaining about leaks. But half the time he's doing the leaks.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Is that it? Are we out of here?
And I think on that note, we can say bye.
As soon as the toy department starts to spill over into that guy's name that I don't even like to say. What is that? That's not a name. It's just a collection of letters smashed together for no reason. Bye.
The game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.